Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. For most people, death is something to be feared. We tend to worry a lot about things we don't understand and we can't control, and death is both uncontrollable and baffling, isn't it? So it's no wonder it's frightened us for so long. But as you'll see, death is no longer scary. Instead, death is something we all can embrace. Our guests today, all the way from Sydney, Australia, are two of the world's leading afterlife researchers, and they're the world's foremost advocates for a broader understanding of what really happens when we die. Victor Zammit is an attorney by training, as am I. We attorneys really care about finding the good evidence and applying it well.
That's right.
Victor's wife, Wendy, is a tireless researcher in her own right, and she's my good friend. Welcome, Wendy and Victor.
Roberta, nice to talk to you again.
Lovely to be here with you again, Roberta. And on your new show, too.
Yeah, well, we're having a lot of fun with this. What we're trying to do is to shape a sort of trajectory of understanding, and you're a very important part of it because you've done so much work for 25 years plus and counting. Victor and Wendy have been researching the afterlife in a very, very methodical way. And they're sort of my heroes because even though I'd been researching during that time, I was not focused as they've always been focused and advocating for the truth as I'm trying to do now. So I admire you both so much. But Victor, tell me, you've spent 25 years or so, studying nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife evidence. And I know that your interest springs from an experience or two that you had a long time ago. Tell us about what those were. What got you started on this path?
Oh, yes. So look, some 25 years ago, in those times, I used to go regularly to the skeptics, humanist meetings, and we had no time for the paranormal.
You were a skeptic.
Absolutely, yeah. And we used to ridicule anything to do with the paranormal, anything to do with the afterlife.
You actually went to meetings of people
Wednesday night, yes.
Oh, they were even on Wednesday nights. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. One day, I woke up and the world changed for me because I started to have these experiences, psychic experiences. I didn't ask for these experiences. It's like the psychic alarm clock went on.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And therefore, we have things like I was telling Wendy, somebody's going to knock on the door. You know, about 3 minutes, 4 minutes later, somebody knocks on the door.
How did you know that, though? But Victor, how did you know? It just popped into your head? Someone was going to knock on the door?
It's a feeling. I got this feeling. You know, something popped into my head, you know? I said, wow. Someone's got to do this. And for example, the phone was going to ring. I told Wendy. She said, oh, don't be silly. You know, as soon as she said, don't be silly, the phone rings, you see.
but this is the kind of thing that I think a lot of people have these experiences. I hear about them all the time. And most people seem to dismiss them, but you didn't. Why didn't you?
Well, no, because I was experiencing them myself, and I knew they were real. The experiential is very, very powerful. So I had to go to the experts, and I said, what is going on?
Right.
And then they told me, you're psychic. I said, me, psychic? I said, if I wanted a humanist there, they'd probably shoot me on the spot.
Did you go and tell them? Did you go one Wednesday night and say, sorry, I have to resign because now I'm psychic? Did you do that?
I did. And they didn't believe me. So I said, okay. So this is when I used my professional skills as a lawyer preparing my case to convince those skeptics that the paranormal exists and that the afterlife exists. It was a challenge, but I was thorough. I prepared my case. They actually, in the last 25 years, they invited me some 5 times to address them. Because each time I went there, when I was prepared the first time, Roberta, I'm telling you this. I said, look, you're dealing with a professional here. I am presenting this evidence nobody has been able to rebut, which means that it's valid and it remains valid until somebody rebutted. In the last number of years, Nobody has been able to do that. And we get information directly from the afterlife, from those highly credible afterlife teachers. Monsignor Hugh Benson, I just mentioned one. And he says, look, the afterlife has huge consequences.
Victor, let's talk about the kinds of evidence you found in some kind of order. Obviously, communications from the dead are very important. That was how I got into this. Is that what happened with you as well?
The way we structured the book, Roberta, we started off by looking at things that happen to people spontaneously. As Victor said, the personal experience is often what gets people started. And some of those personal experiences are near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences. Quite a few people, I think the figures show 25% of people have an out-of-body experience at some time in their life.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Very high proportion of people. And they don't know what it's all about. Another thing is after-death communications. We find around about 50% of people have seen or heard or sensed a loved one or an animal after they died.
I think that's probably close to right. It may be higher than that. It seems to be close to 50%, even just between widows and widowers. And don't you think it's surprising how few people know about these experiences, given how common they are?
Well, absolutely. And people keep them quiet. So we started with those, and then we looked at deathbed visions, which is when people are dying, how they see their loved ones coming to meet them. And again, that is very, very common experience. And then we moved on to the experimental evidence, the mediumship, all the different kinds of mediumship, and reincarnation, and then the electronic communications. So there is a definite structure in the way we put the evidence together.
But now you were doing this over a period of decades. You were just, this was your hobby then. I guess the two of you were doing this research and coming up with all these different kinds of evidence and pursuing them?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, this is the idea. Like, we get into something and we find interesting and we talk about it and questions are raised and we do more research. And, with our discipline, we want anything that could be independently substantiated. We are not into subjectivity at all. Because of the work I used to do, whenever I presented anything, I had to support it.
And we were very fortunate, Roberta, that once we started the report, the weekly report, we were contacted by researchers in all of these areas all over the world. For example, for the last 20 years, we've been corresponding with Sonia Rinaldi in Brazil, who's been doing instrumental transcommunication. We've been corresponding with the Brazilian spiritists, who have got a wonderful whole body of experience, particularly in writing mediumship, and even with the remote viewers. So we're very fortunate that we've had this ongoing input from people who are actually in the field and experimenting.
But during all this time, of course, we had Victor still a skeptic and trying to put the piece in. I have sympathized totally, Victor, because I've been the same way. I think of myself as highly skeptical. And if something doesn't fit with what I already know or doesn't come very strongly sort of substantiated, I won't even really look at it.
Yeah.
Which means there are whole areas of evidence, such as mediums after 1950, I've tried to ignore. And still, I think that it's impossible to really ignore the evidence, however you go at it, because it all fits together and it all makes sense. Weren't you struck by that?
Just let me say this, because as I said to you, I want to address the skeptics. I mean, when I say skeptics, these are the closed-minded, extreme skeptics. But I was able to keep them quiet. You know, they didn't come up with anything I couldn't answer. And
when did you first encounter a skeptic? I mean, how did that all start? Obviously, your skeptic friends there, when you suddenly turned on them and sort of got religion, so to speak, they kind of accepted you, I guess, and as not crazy. But at some point, as you were going out and talking about this, and I know you've been very upfront about it and public, you must have encountered your first skeptic. Tell me that story.
Well, when the webpage first went up, Victor used to get emails from skeptics all the time. Do you remember, Vic, Your work was mentioned on radio in America, and I think we got 200 letters from skeptics saying that it was impossible to prove the afterlife.
It was mentioned on the Larry King show. We used to get it, the Larry King show, and the afterlife used to be discussed. And I remember Sylvia Brown raised the issue that when Larry King told her that, why doesn't she take that guy's from Florida, the $1 million challenge? She said, I'll do that when he takes a Victor Zamet.
Did she really? When did your website first come up?
About 15 years ago, Roberta.
15 years. Okay. You've been in the lists for a long time, so to speak, fighting.
Definitely.
But, you know, one thing I came to understand with the really closed-minded skeptics is that, like, when I was there at the humanist skeptics, and I was proving everything I said, they kept their mouths shut, you know, they were just so overwhelmed. But during the question time, a guy stood up and said, you know, one of the old timers, he said, Victor, I wouldn't believe in the afterlife even if you could prove it to me.
Wow.
Just that gives you some idea the people I was dealing with.
Roberta, one of the interesting things that, right from the start, that made us write the book was we were going to a lot of spiritual development groups where people were trying to have their own experiences of the afterlife. And 90% of them were women, and they all were saying that they had a skeptical husband or a skeptical son or somebody who was discouraging them and telling them that it was all a load of rubbish and that they should give it up. And we wanted to actually give them a little book that they could give to their relatives to actually say, see, some of the greatest scientists in history have said that this is for real.
I should just mention here, we're talking with Victor and Wendy Zamet, and the book they keep talking about is a wonderful book. It's called A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. It has 5 stars on Amazon with more than 150 worldwide reviews on Amazon. I've never heard of such a thing, and I think that's just fabulous, but it just shows you how hungry people are for this information. But why do you think people are skeptical? What's the root of that skepticism? Or not even, it's not, I don't, to me, to be skeptical is to be open-minded but not disposed to take anything at face value. Well, you're talking about people who just plain refuse to look at what's right under their nose just because they don't like it. What's the root of that, do you think?
Oh, I think there are a number of reasons. I asked one of the skeptics, I said, where are you born? He says, here in Sydney. He said, and your parents? They were skeptics like me, you know, like this. I said, no wonder you're a skeptic. I said, if you were born in India, you're very likely to be a Hindu who believes in the afterlife and in reincarnation. If you were born in Israel, you'd be Jewish, with Judaism as the belief. If you were born in Iran, you'd likely to be a Muslim with Islamic belief. So, you know, one of the reasons is that chance plays a big part. But this is what I keep saying on our report, that we have to rise above our early environmental conditioning and apply the scientific principles, whether what we come across in the afterlife evidence is valid or not. Put it to the test.
So what you're saying is, you know, gee, this is really kind of a religion to them. It's a belief system that they were raised in, and it's part of who they feel they are, just as if you were raised a Christian or a Muslim, that's what it is, really. It's basically a belief system.
And it's the belief system that is propagated by the media. The media, remember, is owned by commercial interests, and they have their own particular agenda. And the media for many, many years has been very, very skeptical, ridiculing anything to do with the afterlife.
But it's only just very recently that the media in England and in Australia, I don't know about the US, but ever since Sally Morgan... The medium successfully sued a journalist of the Daily Mail, and she won $250,000 because he said to her, "Oh, she was fraudulent." The new precedent is that, well, anybody who wants to be successful in this must prove specifically what aspect of the demonstration is fraudulent?
I think you're right. It was a very important case in terms of trying to turn this belief system that, as you say, has been espoused by the media. And I want to talk separately about the fact that it's unfortunately become the center of what used to be science. This belief system has, I think, been checked a bit by that. There's something else going on, though, too. When I came out with The Fun of Dying in 2010, I was doing a lot of speaking on this topic. I thought I was sure I was just going to get it, because here I am saying science is wrong. And you know what? Christianity is also wrong. So basically, I'm saying I know something that, and my dear friends, the Zamets, and a few other people that we know and are working with, we know something that most people don't know. And in fact, it goes against what most people believe. I was sure I would be destroyed by skeptics. I heard from none. I was doing a lot of speaking. The book got a lot of, thanks to you for being out there and being the crusader, sort of took the arrows for those of us coming after you. But I was so nervous about Christians, to be perfectly frank, that I called my quotations from Jesus in the first, The Fun of Dying, I was quoting Yeshua, sort of saying, Christians, you can have Jesus. I'm just going to have this other separate guy who coincidentally said all the same stuff, and his name is Yeshua. But thank God that nobody stepped on me, and I was brave enough in the new edition out this fall, which Victor Zamet wrote the foreword for. And bless you, sir. I love the foreword. My new The Fun of Dying has Victor's name right on the cover. But I haven't heard from anyone. And you tell me, too, that you aren't hearing from people as you used to.
Let me tell you this. As you know from my weekly report, I challenge these scientists like Professor Richard Dawkins and others like him to put up or shut up, because they are coming to conclusions without investigating. I said to Richard Dawkins, I said, that's not scientific. You cannot come to a conclusion before you investigate.
And what does he say to that?
He doesn't reply. He says, I'm not a debater.
Oh, my goodness.
He's pushing cowardice to its extreme. They
yes.
run away.
Yes.
When I challenged them to take him on, I said, we will have an international debate on the internet. Let me cross-examine you and then get one of your lawyers to examine me. Oh, no, he says, there's no way. I'm not a trained debater like you, you know all this.
Didn't he debate Eben Alexander? And I think...
No, did, not him. I don't think it was him. So,
someone did.
Someone did, yeah.
There have been, but they seem to be sort of couched in terms of the atheists, as opposed to really being treated as an open-minded discussion, which, frankly, you or I or anybody would be happy to enter an open-minded discussion, right? I mean, we don't have anything to hide. This is all fact.
Nothing.
Totally. And when you examine the argument of the atheists, they're things mostly that we agree with, that there's been a lot of abuses in the Christian church, that
That's
there's
right.
been a lot of distortion. That's pretty much all of their argument. They don't then go on and say, well, okay, is there an afterlife separate from religion? They just criticize religion.
Yeah, that's a great point,
saying,
Wendy. That's really true.
I keep on saying that law is more important than science to prove the afterlife.
Law is more important than science to prove the afterlife. How is that?
Oh, well. A scientist would say, for example, there's gravity, right? And they
right.
stop, full stop. We take it a step further. I say, okay, now where did gravity come from?
Oh, okay. Right, right. Lawyers need to go to the source. Right, exactly right.
And then they come up with the same old boring answer, chance. And the thousand things that I raised, they keep on saying, oh, it came by chance. You know, this kind of thing.
Not only that, Roberta, a lot of the evidence for the afterlife comes from personal testimony. And lawyers, as you know, are pretty good at determining the character of a witness. They
yes.
can look at things like credibility, cross-referencing, whether the accounts are consistent with the accounts of other witnesses. They can look at the question of motivation. What does a person have to gain? Now, I believe that this is a thing where lawyers, particularly those who are used to dealing with large amounts of people, have got a pretty good idea of when people are telling the truth.
I think that's a good point. And also lawyers sort of look at the evidence in context. Don't take little scattered facts, but try to build a framework of facts that all support one another. You need to build your case, basically. And that's really what you and Victor have done so well in your book, A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. It's a case that has to be made. I mean, we look at all these different areas of evidence and we put them together and they fit. That's what's astonishing to me. It all fits.
And that's one of the things that scientists don't have. Scientists today specialize in a micro area. So you have the physicists not talking to the biologists. And then they're not looking at the bigger picture of how it all fits together.
Yeah, and that's really, I think, troubling to all of us in this field, because we have our two trusted institutions. Of course, one of them is religion in a large sense, and Christianity in the West, which really are not, for them it's all about beliefs, and they think it's perfectly legitimate to teach people to believe things based on no evidence. And that is troubling to me as we advance into the 21st century all by itself. We don't have to just believe that there's a God. We've got a lot of evidence that there is this entity, not that much like the Christian God, but certainly much better, actually, more loving and more wonderful than the Christian God. We can prove it. We don't need to have just belief systems anymore that support it. So that's on one side. We've got that trusted institution. And then on the other side, as you say, we've got this scientific edifice built, which we really, really trust. I mean, look at all the things they've done for us, the scientists, in the last couple of hundred years. But they're lying to us. They're lying to us because they're saying, here's the world. We've just covered the world. And oops, there's no room in it for all this afterlife stuff. That's just nonsense.
But you know, Roberta, there are many scientists who, on record, they say, "Oh, we're atheists, or we're against the paranormal, or we're against the afterlife." But secretly, we know that they are on our side. Well, I had a number of scientists who contacted us, and they said, "Well, but please don't ever mention my name."
Oh, and that's very common. Dean Radin says, Dr. Dean Radin from the Institute of Noetic Sciences. He says that whenever he gives a talk, a lot of scientists will come up and say, "Oh, this is fascinating. I wish I could spend my life investigating this." But there's no career in it.
I've got to make a living.
I've got to make a living.
Yeah.
And the employers, if they specialize in this, it's it's a black mark on your career.
I hear that over and over again. From scientists who, like Dean Radin and like Gary Schwartz, scientists who legitimately work in this field.
Yeah.
They say, our wonderful friend Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona in Tucson says that he could not work in this field, except he already has tenure there. And so they sort of let him do his thing.
Yeah.
And I find that appalling. So but what do you think is at the core of that? Because it's, as you say, it's the funding sources, it's universities, it's the grants-giving institutions. Why are they so afraid to discover the afterlife?
There are many reasons for that, but, you know, we lawyers, we go back to the source. Where did it come from, where this skepticism? Well, you know it as well as I do, that for the last 2,000 years, the church in Rome and elsewhere was against and still against the paranormal. Arthur Findlay, the great British historian, said that between 1272 and 1835, the Inquisition killed more than 20 million people. More than 20 million. And anybody, anywhere, anytime, who showed any liking for the paranormal or mediumship was burnt at the stake.
Said, 20 million people. I am astonished.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's going all the Americas, he said, down the South Americas, all of Europe, and parts of North Africa, he said, and some part of Eastern Europe. 20 million over around,
800 years.
800 years or so. And no, and my point is, while we get an automatic and negative rejection towards the paranormal, is because over this time, that negative beliefs became entrenched in the culture, in the history of Western nations. Right? Today, Christianity is virtually Western. And we tended to follow what the historical argument that the mediumship is evil, you're dealing with devils. Even today I'm receiving emails from Europe that some parish priest told some girl, he said, don't have anything to do with mediumship, you're dealing with devils and demons. That's not true.
No, it
Hang
isn't.
on.
It isn't true.
That's not
But
true. I get upset about this, especially I was born a Catholic, a Christian, and when I was a boy, I went to the St. Patrick's College, and I had to learn the prayers in Latin. And if I didn't, I get hit on my backside, you know. But the thing is that we were told that when we die, we went down under 6 feet until Jesus comes to judge the living and the dead. That is not true.
It's not true. No. And but looking again at science, what troubles me is that scientists purport to be studying all the evidence that they can, some area of reality. As Wendy points out, they've become micro specialists, many of them, which is a bit troubling because if you're studying, just one pore on a face, it's sort of hard to step back and see the whole smile. But still, they purport to be studying what's true. And when they are encountering in their daily life, as more and more they must be, more and more evidence that there's a whole lot going on that people just are not looking at in the scientific community, you'd think a few of them would say, okay, maybe we ought to incorporate, but they don't. Maybe we ought to incorporate it. Let me finish my sentence. But what bothers me is, as I think about this, my understanding is that young physicists, people who just entering the university to become physicists, are told, if you study any of these areas, you will not have a career. So if that's what your intention is, just don't do it because it's a waste of your money. If that's what they're telling young scientists who are entering the university, and my understanding is that is exactly what they're doing. If that's what they're telling them, then there's no they're inoculating people against the truth right at the start of their scientific
Yeah,
careers.
absolutely.
Hang on. But very, very recently, there's been a change in the scientific thinking. Wendy was reading an article where a lot of scientists have told Professor Stephen Hawking and others like him, who believe there was a big bang, this is how we all started. There are many, many scientists who said that's a lot of rubbish. Tell Wendy.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think there are people questioning,
Not scientists.
there are scientists definitely even questioning the Big Bang, which has been taken as the absolute truth. They're saying that it's based on, first of all, the mathematics just doesn't add up. And they're saying that it's all based on unprovable hypotheses, a whole lot of things which in other areas just would not exist. But that's getting back to your question, are the young scientists still being indoctrinated? I think definitely it is. There's no doubt that it's still coming through the education system. But on the other hand, people are having their own personal experiences. And yes, we're very much aware of scientists, as we said, who have this problem of trying to reconcile the propaganda or the un, un even the unstated assumptions of science with their own experience and the experiences of their family members. So it is a problem, and I don't think that is at the institutional level on the whole. I don't think it's changing.
I don't think it is either, and it's troubling. There are so there, even in the scientific community, they know that what they're looking at is only a little bit of reality. I mean, the most striking evidence of this to me is the fact that less than 5% of the universe, by scientists' own accounts, is what they're studying. More than 95% of it is dark matter and dark energy. Mm-hmm. Dark matter makes up 27%, by their own calculations, of the universe, 27%, mm-hmm. and 68% is what they call dark energy. And how do they come up with this? It's a mathematical thing, apparently. They have to put these, I'm told, they have to put sort of fudge factors into their calculations to make the universe behave as demonstrably it does behave. So they're backing into these equations, which require that less than 5% of it be all of what they're studying, all of material matter and energy is less than 5% of what we know exists. And to me, if I were a scientist, I'd say, wait a minute, we seem to be missing something kind of major here if we're not looking at what the rest of it is. And exactly. Why did they call it? I should just mention why they call it dark. They call it dark because it doesn't interact with photons. It doesn't give off light, and it doesn't reflect light. So mm-hmm. it doesn't interact with material light, which means it's not conventional matter or conventional energy, which by itself is exciting to me because maybe it is spiritual matter and spiritual energy, which we know is what mm-hmm. composes the afterlife levels. Yeah. In fact, I've further looked at it and said, less than 5% is material and close to 30% is not. Well, that's a 6-to-1 ratio, which is about what we would expect. Yeah. If each of the 6 or so inhabited layers of the afterlife were about the size of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't sound like a coincidence to me, does it, Victor?
Yeah.
Totally. That's totally
right.
Roberta.
That's
just,
right.
Unfortunately, most people are so caught up with daily life and the media that they're not even questioning science. They're not.
That's right.
They're not even aware of the things that you've just mentioned. Our media is not encouraging people to think about these issues.
Not only that, I come back to this issue of what can be proven. I mean, it's okay for some scientists to hypothesize what, how the you know, universe came about, and all kinds of theories, all kinds of formulas. But to me, as a lawyer, I say, it's here and now. I can prove to you physically that the afterlife exists. I said,
right.
I attend one of our materializations, and I can then I will show you how an afterlife entity reduces his vibrations, the energy, the afterlife energy, reduces the speed of the atoms to our level, to the physical level. And as soon as that happens, he becomes solid as I am, as solid as you are.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
It's physical, and you can shake hands with him, right?
Yeah.
Now, that is real. That is happening. It
is happening.
You know what I mean?
Today, yes.
So mathematics or theories, maybe this, maybe black holes, maybe not. Here, you can shake hands with someone who is a
right.
resident in the afterlife.
That's right. Yes.
You know what I mean?
What Victor is talking about is physical mediumship. We're going to do a series of interviews on physical mediumship, and we should probably just give a taste of them here. A physical medium is someone who is such a very good and specialized medium that he can go into trance, be tied up and gagged inside a cabinet, and he's in such deep trance that, well, tell them the things you've seen in the room, Victor, when this fellow is in trance.
Well, first of all, just let me say that the medium's comparative advantage is that he has the skills and the gifts of being able to exude ectoplasm. Ectoplasm is the whitish, vaporish substance that's manufactured by the
Pancreas.
pancreas. Now, when this vapor stuff is out, the resident from the afterlife goes through that because the function of the ectoplasm is to reduce the vibrations of the spirit. And then that becomes solid, as solid as...
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yes, that's the role of ectoplasm.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yes.
So, but in the room where this is going on, because of the ability of the medium and because he says exuded the ectoplasm,
yes,
and he has a very powerful control in the
yes.
case of David Thompson named
yes.
William,
yes.
Very tall man, all of these things happen in the room, in a sealed
yes.
room.
Oh, yes. The first one who comes through is usually the medium's guide, main guide, who is William. Now, William is 6'4". I saw his outline, right? And we saw him even on video at one stage because there was a video David Thompson had on his website for about 3 years. Somebody videoed William. But William then is in charge on who comes through. We had some brilliant celebrities coming through, like Harry Houdini and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Louis Armstrong.
Wow.
And I asked William, I said, William, you are in the afterlife looking after David. I said, and you organized this function here tonight with Louis Armstrong or Harry Houdini or Sir and the others. I said, can you tell us with absolute certainty that they are who they claim to be? And William said, well, look, Victor, he said, it's like if you're going to organize something on where you live on Earth, if you invite one of your leading stars, he said, name me someone who is very well known. I said, all right, Brad Pitt. I said, okay. He said, invite Brad Pitt. Would you know if it's Brad Pitt or not? I said, of course we would. He said, it's the same with us. I can tell you they are who they claim to be.
Yeah. But what's astonishing about these physical mediums to me is that it's a way for someone to physically reunite with someone who has died. I mean, there have been one of the people who's going to be talking with us in future weeks about physical mediums who just has attended a number of seances. Talks about extraordinary reunions with children who have died and
yes.
pets, and you've witnessed them yourself, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
We've been sitting with David for 7 or 8 years, something like that. We've been present in more
wow.
than 100 seances.
Wow, what a treat. That's great.
It's unbelievable. I can't see how anybody who's had those experiences could possibly not believe in the afterlife. I have difficulty getting across to people just how amazingly wonderful this is. We've seen more than 100 reunions of people with their loved ones. And
wow.
the thing that stands out in my mind, of course, is a reunion with my own father. My father died nearly 50 years ago, no, more than 50 years ago, and he materialized in the seance room. He walked across the room. I could hear his steps. He held
oh.
my face in his hands. He kissed me on the forehead. And he talked to me about things that only we would know. And he talked about Victor. He said, is Victor here with you? And I said, yes. He said, oh, give him my regards, which is very much like my dad. He was very formal. Then I asked him, I said, is Mum with you? And they were very, very close. And his response still cracks me up. He said, of course she's with me, and we're having a hell of a time.
There's an endorsement for the afterlife right there. Isn't
absolutely,
that great?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's wonderful. And the David we're talking about is David Thompson, who is one of three really quality physical mediums, fully developed physical mediums in the world right now. Others are developing their talents, but he's at the height of his powers. And he comes to the United States in September of each year. And next September of 2015, He's going to be giving some demonstrations and doing seances at the Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies subgroup on the afterlife convention in Scottsdale. You've got to be there. This is great. I can't wait. It's going to be so unbelievable. Go to ASCSI.org and get all the information about this extraordinary event. It's going to be wonderful.
I can't recommend this conference too strongly, Roberta. We went last year. We came all the way from Sydney last year, and we were just blown away by the quality of the people there, the atmosphere, the networking. I feel that our work has taken a huge step forward since that conference, simply because of the energy, the support that we've received from there.
Wow, that is like the most wonderful thing I have heard about that conference. Thank you so much, Wendy. It was a lot of work to put on, but you just made it worthwhile.
Roberta, I'm just wondering how we can get this message out to people who are just completely closed off, who just say there's absolutely nothing.
Well, the problem I think that we have with atheists is that they think that that means they equate God with religion, which frankly, they're totally independent. That's like equating the sun with physicists. God is a separate entity. Whether God exists or not is not material, but to this discussion. But certainly, if religions are off-putting, we just look at what is behind all of reality in a different way. One of the things that I try to help people understand is there would be an afterlife whether or not there was a personified God, because our minds are eternal. Our minds are part of the creative force that brings forth the universe. So it's like the Dawkins debates. If all he can do is say, well, you know, Christianity has done some awful things and believes some strange things, he's right. You and I agree about that. But the problem is that doesn't mean that there's no God. It just means people are fallible. I really hope we can get as many people as possible to just take a whole new look at the fact that this is all reality-based. This is evidence-based. This has nothing to do with beliefs. I'm lousy at believing stuff. I want to know stuff. And I know that you're both the same way. We've got to help people understand that the study of the afterlife is a separate science-based study. A scientist doesn't defend the faith. A scientist investigates things. But the way we can tell that what they were doing was garbage and was merely being a defender of their own faith was that they wouldn't really look at something. They would instead take one part of a phenomenon, pick one. I mean, something easy to prove, you sort of do another way, such as, for example, the tunnel and the light in a near-death experience.
Yes.
And they would recreate that by depriving the brain of oxygen. And then they would say, which caused apparently a narrowing of vision and it caused sparks of light. And then they would say, aha, we've just proven near-death experiences are just a function of a dying brain. Okay, next case. They didn't investigate near-death experiences because we both know, or we three know, that in near-death experiences, fewer than half of them involve a tunnel or a light. And there are many things that happen, including long-distance validations of people being out of body, meeting with people we didn't know were dead, all kinds of things which are unexplainable by any rational method happen during near-death experiences. And near-death experiences are so common. What is it, 3 or 4%, maybe even 5% of people know have had them? And yet, they throw out this whole area of really interesting investigation and simply say dying brain, because we just proved that if you deprive a brain of oxygen, it'll do funny things. That's an example of what of the stage of really idiocy that science has devolved to when it comes to trying to study the things that you and I have been studying all our lives. It's frustrating as all get out, don't you think so?
But this dying brain objection is no longer relevant because Pam Reynolds' case is
that's
one,
right. Yes, one, that's the good one.
Where the surgeons virtually killed the patient. She had a flat line. Her brain wasn't functioning. Her heart wasn't functioning. They were moving her blood by around her body by way of a machine. She was dead. And yet she had a full-blown near-death experience, and she could hear the surgeons and the nurses there to talking to each other. And when she told them what they, when she came out of it, the surgeon, the doctors were just stunned at how accurate she was.
Now, we should just say that she was having brain surgery, and it was such delicate surgery. They did have to drain her blood,
yes,
flatline her brain,
yes,
chill her body to like, what, 60 degrees or something,
yes,
and,
yes,
and stuff her ears and put pinging, yes, into her ears. So there was no possibility that she could have witnessed anything,
right,
in that room.
That's right.
I totally agree with you, Roberta. And this every week there's somebody, some new scientist saying, aha, we have disproved the near-death experience. And it's nonsense.
But not only that, we had that other, you know, totally uninformed medical doctor, Newcomb, I think his name is, no, Newman, someone, and he said that he investigated this near-death experience. He doesn't accept it. Now, listen to what he said. He said, therefore, there is no afterlife. So I had to email this guy. I said, look, don't be ridiculous. You're making yourself, that's a non sequitur. It doesn't follow. It doesn't follow just because we have other brilliant scientists, Dr. King and many others, Dr. Saber, Michael Saber, and others, who said the near-death experiences are real, are valid. And many, many, many people have experienced them. In America, I was reading some, how many millions? 8 million people claimed to have had a near-death experience.
Right.
Somebody emailed, a scientist, actually, from England some years ago. He said, your evidence cannot be right because there is no afterlife. I said, don't be ridiculous. I said, go and see your lawyer and get your lawyer to contact me because you show you know nothing about rules of evidence. How can you say that? I said, you have not proven that the afterlife doesn't exist. How can you say
it's
what I say, right?
It's really funny. It ears, fingers in the ears and hands over the eyes and humming loudly. It's just very strange. It is strange at this point that there's no chink in their armor. And it must be that they're tremendously invested in, I find it unfathomable because whoever proves there's an afterlife is going to get the Nobel Prize guaranteed. And it's out there for the taking, folks. Just some scientist needs to be brave enough to actually look at the evidence because the evidence is all there and it's incontrovertible.
We're very close to it, I'd say. What we need in materializations is to get some light in. We started this already. We started, but the results are not quite right. But William told us in the future it will get better. And when that happens, Roberta, when we can bring in light into the materializations room, well.
Yeah, it's going to be, it'll be materialization mediums. It'll be better electronic communication that allows for real-time conversations with people demonstrated to be dead.
Absolutely.
There are several things that are going to come together, I think, over the next 5 years that are going to make it extremely difficult for anyone to deny that people survive their deaths. And that's just the beginning. What do you think, when this all happens, when it's on the evening news that this amazing stuff is happening, what do you think that's going to mean?
Oh, I think it will sensitize people that we continue to survive. That would mean they'll have to perhaps change their lives if their lives are not right.
Yes, it people start to live. My experience has been with people that have already figured this out.
Yeah.
You start to live on an eternal stage. It's very different from this, birth to death is a quick trip. I've got to get what I can get and what pleasures I can. You really start to think totally differently about everything. And people become, frankly, a whole lot nicer. And that's one reason I think that this study is really worth pushing. Because we're so discouraged about the way the world is now. And I think that comes in large part because of this purely materialistic, sort of pseudoscience-based way that we look at the world is in not understanding that we live on an eternal stage. What we do matters every day. What we think matters much more than we possibly can imagine. And when people, when most people know that, that's going to make all the difference, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it will make people become long-term thinkers and long-term planners.
Yes, but it's also going to make them think, you know, maybe I don't want to fight a war now, or maybe I want to be kinder to people that need my help.
We can see the effects of this in people who've had a near-death experience.
Yes.
I mean, the research shows that they give up alcohol, they give up smoking, they watch less television, they read fewer newspapers, they become interested in helping others, they have a different sense of purpose.
Yes.
And they become totally different people. The interesting thing is that, and this PMH Atwater found that as a result of this, something like 75% of them get divorced because their family can't cope with a new person.
Oh, that's not necessarily good news.
Which is not necessarily good news.
Not necessarily good.
But the interesting thing is that the change is so dramatic.
Yes.
And of course, if their partners have that same experience as well and realize that, you know, this is what happens, that your whole value system changes.
Your value system changes. I think that's an excellent point. People who have near-death experiences and people who have studied the afterlife evidence extensively, all these people who suddenly understand there's a whole lot more going on than what we used to think is going on, the physical is only a tiny part of what's real, it does make people very different. And that's what I look forward to. I look forward to the day when everyone knows these truths and starts living love, living acceptance, living joy, living eternally.
Yeah.
That's going to change everything.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Sure. Yeah.
We're coming to the end of our time. I just want to make sure everyone knows just Victor and Wendy Zammit are just wonderful people and a lot of fun, but they're very serious people as well. They had this wonderful, wonderful best-selling book called A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. And as I said earlier, their book has 5 stars on Amazon. I could kill for that. And over 150 reviews all over the world. Nearly all of them are 5-star reviews. I think it's just incredible that you certainly deserve your success, but it's just amazing that now people are actually starting to gravitate to this information and really, really live it. And I'm thrilled. This is just the beginning. If you're interested in really knowing what's going on, I strongly urge you to go to victorzammit.com, Zammit, victorzammit.com. They put out a weekly newsletter. It's free. It comes out on Fridays in Australia, but in the U.S. it's Thursday night. And as I'm fond of saying, it's the best news you'll read all week. It's all kinds of wonderful tidbits and solid new things that are happening. I learn something from it every week, and this is an area in which I work. So it's food and drink for anybody who's interested in understanding what's really going on. So thank you so much for my newsletter every Thursday. I look forward to it and open it right up.
And there's no cost to it.
It's free. I don't know how you
free
do it.
Free stuff but is always good.
Yes. Yes, that's right. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you grasp all the implications of that amazing fact, as we've just been saying, it's going to change everything in your life. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which explores all the ways our dead loved ones give us signs of their survival and gives you some of the exciting ways that we can contact them. You'll find details about all my books, plus my blog at robertagrimes.com, and please read my blog. I have a lot of fun writing it. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're coming to understand about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. And my guest next week is one of a handful of scientists who are studying the afterlife in a university setting. We've just been talking about scientists. Here's the exception to that rule. Dr. Gary Schwartz is a distinguished professor at the University of Arizona in Tucson, and he is a ball of fire. We've been talking with Victor and Wendy Zammit about the great abundance of afterlife evidence that proves beyond any doubt to lawyers and to everyone else that your life is eternal. But still, for reasons of their own, mainstream scientists are trying to keep these truths from you, but perhaps not for much longer. Now, please go out and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.